Elvis-style rhinestone cape, which for some reason was draped across the shoulders of a stuffed taxidermic grizzly bear. Travis and I had planned to take our time and really search through the stuff. But then, for no apparent reason, this beam of golden light shot upward through the floor and engulfed the Oracle's old three-legged stool. The light shut off as quickly as it had appeared, and the stool was gone. I didn't know what had just happened. Maybe Apollo was teleporting the stool to its new owner. Maybe somebody was randomly blasting disintegrator rays in our direction. Hey, you never know what those Hephaestus kids will do. Anyway, it kind of freaked us out. We decided not to stick around, just in case that weird beam came back and zapped us away too. We grabbed the nearest things we could reach, a canvas sack for me, a small wooden box for Travis, and got out of that attic faster than you can say Hermes Express. Back at our cabin, we chased the other demigods outside and told them to go play in the woods or something. Being co-head counselors does have its privileges. Then we sat down to examine our take. Travis opened the lid of his box. His eyes grew wide. Whoa, it's a mystical bag of winds. My pulse started to race. Like the thermos Dad gave Percy that time? I've always wanted one of those. Let me see. All slow and dramatic, he pulled out a flat pink rubber sack with a thin nozzle at one end. Behold! I smacked him on the arm. That's a whoopee cushion, you idiot. He burst out laughing. Yeah, but I had you there for a second. Okay, your turn. I rummaged in my bag and pulled out a pair of barbecue tongs. Travis snickered. What are you going to do with those? You can't even toast bread without burning it. Are those things celestial bronze, at least? Dunno. But there's an inscription. For plucking the Tartarus napkin from the fire. I turned them over and read the other side. One use only. I looked at Travis. What the gods does that mean? Well, Connor, my brother said, I believe it means that you only get to use them once. Shut up. I almost threw my new tongs at him, then thought better of it. For some reason, that Tartarus napkin thing made me edgy. I decided to keep the tongs on me at all times, at least until I got my one use out of them. Good thing I did, too, because later that summer, a napkin from Tartarus did appear in the dining pavilion fire. It's a long story, but if I hadn't had those tongs, well, I'm not sure I'd be writing this right now. As for Travis, he loved his whoopee cushion so much he slept with it at night. At least he claimed those sounds I heard were coming from the whoopee cushion. I kind of feel sorry for his college roommate. The Dining Pavilion, brought to you by Pete the Palicus. With its Greek marble columns and unencumbered views of the sky above, this inviting seaside facility screams classical elegance. The oversized tables, each reserved for members of a specific cabin, can easily accommodate up to 20 campers. The white tablecloths, edged with purple, add a dash of distinction. The menu boasts every food imaginable, and dishes are served and cleared by the loveliest dryads in the forest. Just don't forget to start your meal with a burnt offering to the gods. Oh, and ignore that crack in the marble floor. It's from a slight mishap when zombies were accidentally summoned from the underworld. Nothing to worry about. Dining Pavilion Announcements. Reminder: Hecate Head Counselor Lou Ellen Blackstone and Hermes Head Counselors Travis and Connor Stoll will conduct cabin inspections this morning. Veteran campers, please assist your new cabin mates. As always, cleanest cabin wins first shower privileges. Filthiest cabin will clean the Pegasus stables. That is all. Update. It has come to my attention that in the course of today's cabin inspections, several personal items went missing. Stoll Brothers, please report to the big house immediately. That is all. Update. You may recall that during today's cabin inspections, several personal items appear to have gone missing. I say appeared because, in fact, Lou Ellen hid the items by manipulating the mist. Please see her for further details concerning the eventual reappearance of your possessions. Hermes Cabin? My apologies. Hecate Cabin? Please report to the Pegasus Stables. Blackjack and Pork Pie are waiting. That is all. The Amphitheater, brought to you by Pete the Palicus. Just a stone's throw from the Divine Cabins, the Big House, and Half-Blood Hill, this gathering spot features rising tiers of stone bench seating that curve around the central stage. The benches are as comfortable as any mortal movie theater chair, and there's not a bad view in the house. So take a seat, bask in the glow of the campfire, and add your voice to the joyful sing-along with such favorite hits as Grandma Was a Gorgon and This Is Not Kumbaya. This is Sparta. The Camp Store, brought to you by Pete the Palicus. Tragedy. You finally make it to camp alive, only to discover that you forgot your toothbrush. You could iris message your mortal parent for a new one, but do you really want to walk around with dragon breath until it arrives? Instead, hit the camp store. While you're there, be sure to check out the latest line of wind chimes, available in celestial bronze, silver, and seashell. Perfect for interpreting the voices of prophecy-spouting trees. If hanging bling in branches isn't your thing, how about the new Mythamagic expansion pack, Dual Deity Duel? The cards feature holographic images that change the god's aspects from Greek to Roman and back. He's Aries. No, he's Mars. No, he's Aries again. Hours of dizzying head-to-head play. From tees to totes, whatever your needs, the camp store is your perfect one-stop shop. Taking Inventory by Valentina Diaz. OMG. I just about died when I saw Apollo's orientation film. Those cute boys with their shorty short swim trunks? Yes, please. As a daughter of Aphrodite, I'm always on the lookout for fresh, old as new fashion ideas. Seeing those 1950s retro styles reminded me of a locked chest marked vintage clothing that I'd spotted in the back of the camp store a couple of days before. I'd been meaning to check out that chest, but Connor would never let me behind the counter to rummage through it. He was so annoying. He didn't understand the concept of browsing, like, at all. Inspired by the film, I decided to take matters into my own hands, despite the fact that I just had a manicure. I thought I might find some ideas for a new clothing line inside that trunk, so off I went. Once inside the shop, I smashed open the lock on the trunk. Connor wasn't around. I was afraid I might just find musty retro t-shirts, knee-high tube socks, shudder, skinny ties, and other stuff that dated back to the last century, but the clothing I found went way, way back. I'm talking like millennia back. Shows you what cedar lining and sachets of potpourri can do to keep clothes fresh, am I right? The first thing that hit me about the vintage clothing was the colors. Red, yellow, green, blue, indigo. It was like Iris had thrown up on them in, you know, a good way. I was stunned because I'd always imagined the ancient Greeks dressed in white. I mean, that's what the clothing on the marble statues looks like, right? Then I remembered something Chiron had told me one time. The statues used to be painted and they're white now only because the paint's worn off. Looking at the clothes in the trunk, I realized the ancient Greeks actually had worn colorful clothes. It made me proud of my ancestors. I recognized the styles right away. On top were chitons, tunic-like thingies that were dress length for women, thigh length for men, and, giggle, super short for male athletes. Underneath were some hamatians, or cloaks, and a few peplos. A peplos is a big rectangle of fabric that could be turned into just about anything, kind of like those cute beach cover-ups that convert from shoulder wrap to halter top dress to sleeveless dress to wraparound skirt. Perfect for the budget-conscious shopper, BTW. There were so many garments. I was afraid I'd miss something, so I grabbed a bunch of clothes hangers and racked those bad boys up. Oh, yeah. I ran my hand over the linen and wool. It's dress-up time. For the next hour, I tried on everything, except the strophion. It was too much like a tube top, which no girl should ever wear, in my opinion. I borrowed ancient Greek-style jewelry and footwear from the store's many storage lockers to complete my outfits. I was just twisting up my hair in an elaborate braided do when I saw one last item in the bottom of the trunk, an item I was pretty sure hadn't been there when I looked before. Holy Aphrodite's girdle! I yelped as I pulled out Aphrodite's girdle. My hands trembled. I knew all about this particular article of clothing, though I'd never seen it in person before. Aphrodite was super careful about when she wore it, crafted for mom by Hephaestus when they were still on good speaking terms. The girdle was more like a fashionable belt, a finely wrought wide band of gold filigree, 20 karat if I'm not mistaken, infused with magic. Supposedly, anyone who saw mom wearing it got whipped up in a frenzy of passion for her. Not that she needs any help in that department. I mean, everyone who sees her gets the hots for her. As I held the magical belt, I couldn't help wondering if its power would work for me. I thought about taking it for a test drive around camp. I'd saunter past a certain Brazilian boy's cabin and pause long enough for him to take a gander. Tempting, I thought, but no. I tossed the girdle back in the trunk. Why? Because I'd heard tales of Hephaestus cursing the items he made. The girdle probably wasn't cursed, but I wasn't going to chance triggering some dormant spell. Besides, any magic item used by the gods could be too much for demigods to handle. As far as I know, the girdle is still at the bottom of that trunk. I left everything the way I'd found it when I closed up the store, but it makes me wonder, what was Mom's girdle doing there? Will there be a time when I need to use it for some emergency? For now, though, I'll have to rely on my own charms to make people fall in love with me. Fortunately, I take after my mom. I'm pretty good at whipping up passionate frenzies. Magical landmarks. Apollo's here. Scene. A room decorated with ornate tapestries, candles, and carpets in hues of purple, red, and gold. In the center is a golden throne on a dais, Apollo, dressed in jeans, a brilliant white t-shirt, a leather jacket, and sunglasses, lounges on the throne. On the wall is a neon sign that reads, "Fortunately, Apollo's here." Apollo. Next! A girl camper enters. Girl. Oh, great Apollo, god of prophecy, tell me, will I ever find love? Apollo. Find love? Mugs for the camera. I didn't know it was missing. Rim shot followed by canned laughter. Apollo. Next! A boy camper enters. Boy. Oh, great Apollo, god of prophecy, tell me,
Will I ever be rich?
Apollo. What's your name, child?
Boy.
Albert, Great Apollo.
Apollo. Well, Albert, Great Apollo, I foresee only one way for you to be rich.
Boy.
What is it?
Apollo. Mugs for camera. Change your name to Richard.
Rimshot followed by canned laughter.
Apollo. Next!
A different boy camper enters. Boy number two.
Oh, Great Apollo, God of prophecy, will I ever discover who my godly parent is?
Apollo.
Dear child, the answer is right in front of you.
Boy number two, looking around.
Really? Where?
Apollo stands up and spreads arms wide.
Right in front of you.
Boy number two.
I don't get it. Am I missing a clue?
Apollo.
You're missing a clue, all right.
Mugs for the camera.
One might even call you clueless.
Rimshot followed by canned laughter and pre-recorded applause.
From the comedy skit, Fortunately Apollo's Here, written by and starring Apollo.
A comedy? Really? Man, I'm glad I didn't live through 1950s television. PJ.
The Grove of Dodona. Brought to you by Pete the Palicus.
Psst. Got wind chimes? Enjoy limericks? Want to know the future? Then hurry past Zephyrus Creek and Zeus's Fist to the forest that holds this most ancient of all oracles. Come on, it's not much farther. Just follow the whispers. The Cave of the Oracle, brought to you by Pete the Palicus. Yo, demigods, are you craving a great new hangout? Word on the street is the Oracle's crib on Half-Blood Hill totally rocks. It's tricked out from top to bottom with purple curtains and massive sofas, with throw pillows for fresh pops of color, yo. Check out the graphic wall murals, graffiti quotes, and other funky artwork created by the one and only Delphic Oracle, Rachel Elizabeth Dare. You know what they say. If the torches are a-burnin', the prophecies are a-churnin'.
A Case of PPSS by Rachel Elizabeth Dare.
Do I scare you? I hope not. Most new campers think I'm uber spooky because I live part-time in a cave, have horrifying dreams about the end of the world, and spout enigmatic prophecies riddled with cheerful words such as death. Why anyone would find that disturbing is beyond me. I delivered my first prophecy less than a minute after I accepted the spirit of Delphi. If you want to know about the events triggered by those words, just ask any camper who lived through it. If you want to ask a camper who died through it, Nico D'Angelo might set up a meet. I thought I was prepared for the experience. I mean, I'd been channeling visions and seeing weird things most of my life. How different could mind melding with an ancient spirit be? Answer? Very. Luckily, the god Apollo was on hand to help me to the big house.
You're experiencing PPSS,
he said as he led me up the stairs and to an empty hospital bed. PPSS? What's that? I asked right before I threw up into a nearby bin.
Post-prophetic stress syndrome. Just lie still. It'll pass.
You sure? He made a face.
Hello, God of prophecy, remember?
About that, I said. Why do you need an oracle? Why don't you dole out your own prophecies? He looked skyward and rendered his reply in haiku.
I'm a free spirit, adrift in sunshine and song. Office hours bore me.
I thought about questioning whether hours was one syllable or two, but I let it slide, figuring he knew, seeing as he's the god of poetry. Then I blurted out another question. Why can't the oracle have a boyfriend? I'm not sure why I asked. I wasn't interested in anyone. Well, not anymore, anyway. Guess I was just curious. He didn't answer immediately. Instead, he broke off a leaf from a nearby laurel bough and crushed it between his finger and thumb. The air filled with its pungent aroma.
Love can cloud the mind, he said at last. An oracle with an obstructed view is of no use.
His voice was sorrowful, and I remembered that he had once been madly in love with a nymph named Daphne, who turned into a laurel tree to escape his amorous attentions. I guess he knew about clouded minds. I changed the subject. Why do prophecies have to be so confusing? I mean, how come I can't just say straight up what's going to happen? He heaved a sigh, as if he'd answered the same question a million times before, which, given that he's immortal, maybe he had.
That would be as much fun as a two-piece jigsaw puzzle. Mystery, intrigue, hints of danger, unusual rhymes, those are what makes a memorable prophecy. Take this one, for instance. Pinochle and ping pong, ambrosia squares and nectar, an attic with an oracle, a disembodied leopard, a centaur in a wheelchair, a wine dude serving time. This omphalos of half-blood will welcome offspring half-divine.
Full disclosure, I had to look up omphalos. You hit the first syllable, by the way, like you would an emphasis. The word means navel, as in the center point of something, not your belly button. Though I suppose you could use it that way to impress your friends. I might pierce my omphalos when I'm older, or mock your enemies. You really don't know where your omphalos is? Ha ha! But such navel contemplation came later. At that moment, Apollo was looking at me expectantly. Right, I said. The prophecy describes Chiron, Dionysus, and the big house, obviously.
Obvious to you, sure,
Apollo agreed.
But what if I told you that little prophetic nugget was delivered more than 1,000 years ago?
I had a sudden vision of people back then hearing the words pinochle, ping pong, and dude. Gods only knew what they thought they meant. Food? Weapons? Clothing? They wouldn't have had a clue. And what did Chiron make of the bit about the centaur in a wheelchair? The truth struck me like a cold, wet cloth to the face. Unless they were immortal, the people who heard that prophecy died without understanding what it meant. They may have gone crazy or even perished on quests attempting to decipher its meaning. The thought made me really sad, then super anxious about prophecies I might utter someday. Apollo? I whispered. Will my words send people on hopeless quests?
Oh, Rachel.
Apollo patted my hand comfortingly.
Yes.
Well, that's just peachy. I didn't mean to sound bitter, but honestly, I was starting to have significant second thoughts about the whole oracle gig. Apollo stood up then.
You need sleep,
he said.
But before I go, I have something for you.
He pointed at the ceiling. A beam of golden light issued from his fingertip. A moment later, a present, clumsily wrapped in gold foil paper, thudded next to me. I found out later that the beam of light almost gave the Stoll brothers heart attacks.
Open it!
Inside was a rickety-looking three-legged stool. Thanks? I said.
It's the original,
he told me.
From Delphi. Well, from the Big House attic, more recently, where it languished underneath the posterior of your predecessor for far too long.
Understanding dawned on me. This is the tripod of Delphi, the one the first oracle sat on thousands of years ago. You're giving it to me?
I could have let you try stealing it, I suppose,
Apollo said, scratching his head.
But that didn't go so well for Heracles when he tried it. He was punished with a year of women's work for his crime.
I cocked an eyebrow. Excuse me? Women's work? Apollo waved dismissively.
Housework, chores, whatever. All that mattered was that for a blowhard like Heracles, washing dishes and sweeping floors was a well-deserved punch in the ego.
He patted the stool lovingly.
The butts of many powerful women have rested here.
I'm honored to be adding my derriere to the list. As the words came out of my mouth, I realized I meant it. For good or bad, I was the new Oracle of Delphi. I celebrated the momentous occasion by throwing up again. Things have been a little quiet around my cave of late, unless you count my recent mural-eradicating, sofa-flipping, curtain-shredding tantrum, which I sincerely hope you won't. For some reason, the pilot light of prophecy has gone out, and Apollo hasn't been able to reignite it. But don't worry, I predict I'll be spouting green smoke and confusion again by the time you're ready for a quest. And that will be soon, I have a feeling.
The Magical Border, brought to you by Pete the Palicus. Tired of living with mortals who smell of B.O., cigars, and garlic? Then step through the border and leave the stench behind, powered by the strongest mist and guaranteed to repel even the most determined monsters and noisiest mortals. This invisible barrier surrounds Camp Half-Blood with the best demigod protection magic can conjure. And that's not all. As an added bonus, inside the borders of camp, you'll be enveloped in delightful springtime weather all year round. So if you're ready to say goodbye to stink, slush, and certain death, come through the border today. Some restrictions apply. With invading armies and giant hostile animated statues, results may vary. Thalia's Pine and the Golden Fleece, brought to you by Pete the Palicus. Created by Zeus himself to embody the life essence of his dying daughter, Thalia Grace, this storied tree marks the easternmost boundary of Camp Half-Blood. The pine flourished for 5 years, strengthening the border with its magic. Then, Luke Castellan, foul minion of Kronos, poisoned it with elder python venom. The valiant tree clung to life until the golden fleece, that ancient mystical blanket shorn from a flying ram, restored its vigor. The fleece's curative powers even released Thalia from her piney imprisonment, sap-free. Today, the golden fleece and the Athena Parthenos energize the camp's protective barriers, but the pine tree remains as a tribute to Thalia Grace's bravery. It also smells really nice. Approach at your own risk. Peleus the guardian dragon only appears to be sleeping.
On the outside, looking in, a conversation via video conference with Sally Jackson and Frederick Chase. By Thalia Grace and Leo Valdez. Thalia. Leo, did you get this stupid recording device working yet? What? I can't hear you. What? Gods, and people wonder why I joined Artem. Oh, hi everyone. Apparently I'd muted Leo. Leo. You'd be surprised how often people do that to me. Thalia. Would I? So, we're talking with Sally Jackson, mother of Percy, and Frederick Chase, father of Annabeth, via a four-way video conference setup that Leo vows will work just fine. Leo, did I vow? Not on the River Styx, I know better. Sally, hello, Thalia, dear. You're looking particularly punk today, and Leo, as smoking hot as always, am I right? Sally, well, smoking anyway. You're smoldering through your t-shirt. Leo, whoops, let me put me out. There. Thalia, anyway, we're here to get insight into how mortal parents feel about Camp Half-Blood. Ms. Jackson, Dr. Chase, you've never actually set foot in the camp, is that right? Sally, that's correct. Even though I can see through the mist better than most mortals, I can't get through the magic border. I suppose if someone gave me direct permission to enter, I might be able to, but even then, I'm not sure. The closest I ever got was the summit of Half-Blood Hill, and honestly, I'm not anxious to try that again. Leo. Yeah, Peleus the dragon might snack on you, or the Athena Parthenos might zap you with her laser beam eyes. Wait, does the statue even have laser beam eyes? Or is that just my wishful thinking? Not that I'd want you to be zapped, Mrs. J. Sally. Thank you, dear. That's very comforting to know. Thalia. How about you, Dr. Chase? Frederick. Puts down model airplane he was tinkering with. Oh, yes. Camp. No, never been, though it would be fascinating to study from a historical point of view. From what Annabeth has told me, the only uninvited mortal to make it through unscathed was Rachel Dare. Thalia. I heard there was this pizza guy once, but that's probably just a camp legend. Ms. Jackson, you may recall that I was there, in Pine Tree Mode, the first time Percy passed through. I don't remember it, though, because, well, I was a tree. Sally. I'm a little foggy on the details myself. Frederick.
Something about a minotaur?
Sally. Everything about a minotaur. Thalia. Can't say my first time at the border was much better. Fighting off monsters 1 minute, then zap, oozing tree sap the next. Frederick.
My word, Thalia, I just realized I've never thanked you for saving Annabeth's life that day.
Thalia. It's ancient history, Dr. Chase, no worries.
Frederick. Perhaps I could ship you this model of Amelia Earhart's 1921 Kinner Airster biplane that I just finished. It's a lovely replica.
Thalia. That's really not necessary. But tell me, both of you, now that things have settled down in the demigod world, wouldn't you ever want to see Camp Half-Blood for yourselves? Sally. Well, yes, of course. If there were no minotaurs, or, laser beam shooting impediments. In fact, after Percy's first summer there, I did ask Chiron if he'd open the camp for just 1 day so families could visit. Mortal families, that is.
Leo.
I'm guessing Chiron said no.
Sally.
Yes.
Leo.
Wait, he said yes?
Sally.
No, he said no.
Leo.
I'm confused.
Thalia.
What else is new?
Sally.
Chiron told me that he did have a visitor's day once about 100 years ago, but it did not go well.
Thalia.
What happened?
Sally.
Somehow an Eidolon, a manticore, and a disgruntled party pony found out about it. The Eidolon possessed the camper's half-sister. The centaur got his hands on a cap of invisibility, and the manticore disguised himself as a family dog. They infiltrated the camp.
Thalia.
Not a bad plan, though I prefer a direct assault myself.
Sally.
It might have worked except the centaur wasn't the sharpest compass in the drawer. He couldn't help showing off during the archery exhibition. Shot 3 bullseyes before someone noticed the bow was floating in midair.
Thalia.
What about the manticore and the eidolon?
Sally.
They caught the manticore spiking the volleyballs with its tail spikes, that is, not actually hitting the balls over the net.
Thalia.
Volleyball existed 100 years ago?
Frederick.
Yes, indeed. Volleyball, or Mintonette, as it was originally called, was invented in 1895 by William G. Morgan in, sorry, once a professor, always a professor.
Sally.
The eidolon caused the most destruction. It hurled a jar of Greek fire at the climbing wall, which then dripped with flames for hours afterward. That's where Chiron came up with the idea of adding lava as a permanent feature for the wall, by the way.
Thalia.
That Chiron, always finding ways to turn death-defying challenges into much worse death-defying challenges. So what happened to the intruders?
Leo. Festus.
Frederick.
Gesundheit.
Sally.
I think he means Festus, his bronze dragon.
Leo.
The one and only.
You know he was originally built for border patrol, right? What I heard, he had a killer body back then. Like, literally, he had the spiky exterior plating so he could use his body to kill. Man, I bet he body slammed that manticore right back to Tartarus.
Sally.
Chiron did mention there had been some body slamming. As for the eidolon, it took the combined powers of Aphrodite's children to charm-speak the spirit out of the girl.
Leo.
And the centaur?
Sally.
Chiron sorted out the cause of his fellow centaur's anger. Something about not getting his fair share of root beer the last time he was at camp. Chiron, being kind-hearted, let him return to his tribe with a warning. But the camp hasn't held another visitor's day since.
Thalia.
I guess I see why. And now that I think about it, a family day might be depressing for some of the campers who don't have family. I mean, who'd come visit me? Or Leo?
Leo.
Speak for yourself, tree girl. I may not have much family, but all the ladies would flock to me like moths to my flame. Aw, yeah.
Thalia.
Aw, yuck.
Frederick. Now. We'd visit both of you. That is, if you do schedule a visitor's day, and if I can remember to put the date on my calendar.
Sally.
Coughs. I think the important thing is that I know Percy and the rest of you have a safe place to be. I don't feel a driving need to see the camp for myself. It's just comforting to know that when my son is there, he's with friends who have his back.
Leo.
Also his front, his sides, and his top. I draw the line at his bottom, though.
Sally.
However, there is something I'd like to get on the record. Something I think all mortal parents would agree with.
Thalia.
Sure. Go ahead, Ms. Jackson.
Sally.
Demigods, we love you.
Frederick.
Agreed.
Sally.
But if you don't start iris messaging us a little more often, we're going to sick Coach Hedge on you. Take care of yourselves and make us proud. You always do.
The Athena Parthenos, brought to you by Pete the Palicus. Recently recovered from a massive spider web deep within the bowels of Rome, this priceless 40-foot-tall chryselephantine, sculpted of gold and ivory, statue of the goddess Athena, is accessorized with a sphinx and griffin crown, a handheld statue of the goddess Nike, a shield, and a snake. It exudes its protective and somewhat fierce magic from its new home atop Half-Blood Hill.
A Pep Loss for Athena by Malcolm Pace.
Ask anyone here and they'll tell you I'm a level-headed guy. Big on logic, small on drama. A think first, leap second sort of demigod. Comes with being Athena's kid, I guess. So, I was a little freaked out when the vision started hitting me. Demigods have nightmares regularly, as you'll find out soon enough, I'm afraid. But these visions would happen when I was awake. I'd be walking along, not a care in the world, when bam, my brain would be flooded with images of some ancient Greek festival. I saw athletic events like in the Olympics, plus musical contests, poetry readings, and even beauty pageants. I witnessed winners receiving amphorae of olive oil, super valuable back then. I watched a parade that ended with a life-size wooden statue of Athena being ceremoniously draped with a huge colorful cloth. This mental slideshow scrolled through my mind on four separate occasions. By the fourth rerun, I wanted answers. One, what the heck was this festival? Two, where were the visions coming from? And three, why was I having them? I got the answer to the first question by doing a little digging in our cabin's research library. Buried in one book was a description of a festival called the Great Panathenaea that was held every 4 years in Athens in honor of my mother. I learned that the wooden statue was the Athena Polias, meaning Athena of the city, and the cloth was a special peplos, a versatile garment that could be worn as a floor-length skirt, a top and skirt ensemble, a shawl, or gods, I sound like Valentina, sorry. Woven with images depicting Athena's greatest triumphs, like the time she defeated the giant Enceladus. So I'd been seeing the Great Panathenaea. Now I just had to figure out where the visions were coming from and why I was seeing them. The where proved surprisingly easy to solve. Every time the visions hit me, I was near Half-Blood Hill. Therefore, my logical brain told me something in that area was causing the visions. Conclusion? The something was the Athena Parthenos. If you don't believe that's possible, just go up to Half-Blood Hill and experience the Athena Parthenos' power for yourself. The statue radiates magic. Its eyes follow you. It's so lifelike, you expect it to speak. Trust me. Once you feel its power, you'll understand why I decided the statue was channeling the pictures from the past into my head. So that left the question of why. I explored several possibilities, but kept coming back to one. Mom was giving me a not-so-subtle hint. I deduced she missed having a festival dedicated just to her. I further deduced she wanted me to resurrect that festival here at Camp Half-Blood. She would never come right out and tell me that, of course. Demanding to be honored isn't her style. That's why she used the statue as a go-between. Just to be sure I was right, though, I whispered my conclusions to the Athena Parthenos. Yes, I felt a little silly talking to a statue, and of course, the statue didn't reply. Neither did Mom. Not directly, anyway. But that night, an amphora of olive oil appeared beside my bunk. This either meant she was giving me a favorable omen, or she wanted me to make a whole lot of pizza. I figured it was the former. The next morning, I told my siblings and Kyron everything. The Athena kids were all over remaking the festival. Kyron himself had attended the original Panathenaea back in the day, so he readily greenlit the project. Our inaugural Camp Half-Blood Panathenaea is scheduled for next August, to coincide with the dates of the original festival and Mom's Sprang from Zeus's Head Day. That gives us Athena kids about a year to construct a wooden Athena Polias statue, weave a ginormous peplos, organize the competitions, and plan the procession. Some of my siblings suggested just making a peplos for the Athena Parthenos, but firstly, I don't think there's enough cloth on Long Island to make a serape that big. And secondly, the ancient Athenians didn't do it that way. They used a wooden statue made especially for the festival. I want to do it the traditional way because, well, this is all about bringing back a tradition. Am I worried we'll be ready in time? Nah. As children of Athena, planning and organizing runs in our blood. Plus, other campers are already volunteering to help. If you want to lend a hand, the sign-up sheet is on Cabin 6's door. And Mom? I think she approves. The last time I was near the Athena Parthenos, I swear it winked.
Training Grounds. Scene. Apollo jogs backward along the beachfront, shooting arrows from his golden bow. He's followed by campers dressed in combat gear, jogging in military formation.
Apollo. I don't know, but I've been told.
Campers.
We don't know, but we've been told.
Apollo.
The sun god's got a bow of gold.
Campers.
The sun god's got a bow of gold.
Apollo.
He's the best shot in the land.
Campers.
He's the best shot in the land.
Apollo.
Ugh.
Apollo trips and lands on his backside.
I've fallen in the sand.
Campers, jogging circles around him.
He's fallen in the sand.
Apollo.
I meant to do that, so don't laugh.
Campers.
He meant to do that, so don't laugh.
Apollo tries to get up but falls back again.
Ow! I hurt my godly calf.
Campers.
Ow! He hurt his godly calf.
Apollo, glowering and starting to glow.
If you want to live another day.
Campers.
If we want to live another day.
Apollo, radiating brighter.
Stop repeating what I say.
Campers.
Stop.
Military cadence written, chanted, and abruptly ended by Apollo. Best scene ever. PJ.
The Armory, brought to you by Pete the Pelicus. Centrally located and stocked to the rafters with spears, swords, daggers, shields, bows and arrows, and clubs, the Armory is a must-see for those in need of deadly weapons. Dig through, and you might even find one imbued with magical abilities. So don't delay. Your stabber, slicer, slasher, or basher awaits.
The Climbing Wall, brought to you by Pete the Pelicus. Where is fun spelled L-A-V-A? The Climbing Wall, of course. Originally created to fine-tune reflexes and test hand-eye coordination, the Climbing Wall has become every camper's top spot for primal screaming practice. If a fall from halfway up the side doesn't send you to the big house infirmary, the slamming walls or molten magma will. So come on up. Just don't look down. The Combat Arena and the Archery Range, brought to you by Pete the Pelicus. More demigod blood has been shed in this circular fighting zone than anywhere else in camp. So what are you waiting for? Strap on your armor and get ready to sweat, because you ain't never had a workout like this before. You'll engage every muscle as you slash with your sword, jab with your spear, smash with your shield, and stab with your dagger. And that's just the warm-up. Now that your blood is pumping, inside your body, outside your body, whatever, it's time to test your mettle against a straw dummy, or to test your mettle against a live opponent. But remember,
The hits are real, and so is the blood. So keep your guard up. Striking from afar more your style? We've got you covered. Just a javelin's throw from the combat arena is the archery range. With its array of boldly colored targets, their bullseyes daring you to hit them with a well-aimed arrow. Just be on the lookout for errant projectiles so you don't become a target yourself.
The Ares Peacetime Challenge by Ellis Wakefield. To be a great head counselor, you have to be more than just the oldest sibling in a cabin. You have to be a leader, smart, strong, decisive, brave, and also a fearless fighter. Clarice LaRue, our